Welcome to the Manufacturing the Future podcast, the show designed to help you future-proof your manufacturing operations. Each episode features interviews with innovative manufacturing leaders and subject matter experts who share their insights and best practices about the technology that can empower you to streamline operations, prepare your organization for what lies ahead, and continue to keep our world turning. I'm your host, Carrie Jordan, Vice President of Product Management at Epicor. Now, for today's episode.
Hi, everyone, and thank you for listening. Welcome to our show where we're talking with the manufacturers who are leading this incredibly dynamic industry into the future. Our guest today is Marty Metro. He's the founder and CEO of Used Cardboard Boxes and UCB Zero Waste, which both organizations have an exciting vision to reduce waste, to increase recycling, and to promote reuse. Now, this is going to be an interesting discussion. I'm really looking forward to this. Not only are these organizations innovative in the way that they've made being earth-friendly very easy, very cost-effective, but Marty also has extensive experience in manufacturing technologies, including enterprise resource planning, or ERP, which is, of course, what many organizations that we've talked to on the show invest in to manage their financials, operations, supply chain, and often much more. So between tech and recycling boxes, we have a lot to unpack. Let's get started. Marty, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
All right. First, let's get to know you. Can you tell us about yourself and why you started Used Cardboard Boxes and UCB Zero Waste?
Sure. Cut me off because it's a long story, but I'll do what I call 20 years in 3 minutes. So I was your typical MBA. I got my MBA in information systems many years ago. I won't date myself. And got hired by, at the time, the largest technology consulting firm in the world, which was Anderson Consulting, which is now called Accenture. And I worked in the industry of ERP. This was back in the 90s when SAP, a German company, was just getting to the US. And basically, any large Fortune 500 company, if they wanted to be taken seriously, they had to be on an ERP system. So I did that for almost 10 years. And it was during the dot-com, so we rode the waves of all that excitement. So I'd spent about 10 years doing that. And then I like to say, for those of you with gray hair or no hair, in my case, we'll remember the dot-com crash of 2000-ish, maybe a little after 2000. Everything collapsed and there was no one was buying SAP anymore. And surely no one was paying $50 million to implement it, which they were when I was involved. So there I was with a whole lot of background in enterprise resource planning, and I was moving. And I paint this picture not to sound cocky, but I'm going to sound cocky. I can't get away from it. My wife and I were moving into a house. We were driving around in a Land Rover and we were planning to start packing up our house. We just bought a new house in Los Angeles. And we went to U-Haul in our Land Rover to buy boxes. And we walked in and we said, "You've got to be kidding me. There's no way I'm going to buy $4 boxes to move my place from West Hollywood to Hollywood. And then what am I going to do with all these boxes?" So we literally walked out of UL, got into our Land Rover, and drove behind liquor stores and grocery stores and picked up, you know, 100 boxes.
Been there.
And as I did that, I said, you know, this is a visual. Clearly I can afford them, but I'm not paying for them. So it was at that point where no one was hiring experienced SAP consultants. And I said, if I'm not willing to buy boxes, who else? I mean, I'm sure others are not willing to, not to mention people that can't afford to buy new boxes. So I started a company back then. It was called Boomerang Boxes, which was a colossal failure, which we can get into later. But I was all about press and PR and publicity and eco-friendly in 2002. And the press and the publicity and the PR worked perfectly. I got on all the major news outlets. But I learned a very valuable lesson that press and PR don't pay the rent. And I got very addicted to everybody wanting to have me on an interview or whatever it was. And at the same time, I was losing tens of thousands of dollars a month easily. And to make a long story short, that company failed miserably. I went into a lot of debt. But as I was going into debt, I was looking for venture capital firms to save me. And all of them laughed at me. They're like, "Well, if we were to do something like this, we would need a charismatic CEO, maybe somebody with an MBA, somebody with a lot of energy, somebody with a vision, and somebody with the ability to do it." And I said, "Yeah." And they said, "Well, you're that person and you're failing miserably. So why would we invest in this? And I was like, yeah, can't really argue with that logic, until one VC firm came along in 2005 and said, I see what you see and you're doing it all wrong. And I said, I don't disagree. I'm losing hundreds of thousands of dollars. Something's here, but I'm doing it all wrong. So we made a deal to shut down Boomerang Boxes and launch Used Cardboard Boxes Incorporated in 2006 and do it the right way with funding and technology and a focus and a management team and infrastructure. And we have grown significantly every single year since. And we are the largest processor of used boxes in North America. And our clients are everyone from, I like to do them alphabetical order, but like, you know, Dole, General Mills, Kellogg's, McCormick Spice, Walmart, Walgreens, Best Buy, Family Dollar. Lots of big, big, big Fortune 500 companies now are utilizing reuse due to the 20 years of effort we've put into it to make it accessible and easy.
I mean, that was a hard lesson to learn.
Yes.
It sounds like a good one to learn, but a hard one.
Yeah, very painful. I like to say lots of people start businesses. Lots of people start businesses and fail. Lots of people start businesses and fail and then try something else. Very few people start businesses, fail, and then try the same business again.
Yeah.
So I did, and knock on wood, it worked the second time around.
Nice. Okay, so let's talk about the company. So you're making reusing cardboard boxes really easy for, as you said, I mean, some of the largest manufacturers, distributors, retailers, but also for everyday people and families who are moving. You've saved millions of trees. Your company's been in business for so many decades. You're growing fast. How do you do it? Can you tell us about the business model and how it all works?
Sure. There's now two companies, but we'll focus on used cardboard boxes, which is the first company. It's about 15 some years old. The business model is very simple. It's simple to understand. The logistics and the technology behind it are very, very complicated. And I say that coming from an SAP background. So I understand complicated stuff. And it's kind of fun because everyone thinks our business is so simple. I can't tell you how many times I've heard someone say, oh my God, I thought of that years ago. And I go, yeah, we all thought of it years ago. It's doing it is the hard part. Thinking about it is not the hard part. So our business model, used cardboard boxes, the model is simple. We go out and buy massive amounts of cardboard boxes that are being unpacked on a 24-hour a day, 7-day a week process. So think about the Cokes and Pepsis of the world. Those big, big companies are manufacturing gazillions of bottles of soda. And it could be soda, it could be shampoo, it could be mouthwash, it could be whatever. But they're unpacking literally. Coke and Pepsi don't make plastic bottles. They buy them. They don't make plastic caps. They buy them. So the Cokes, the Pepsis, McCormick Spice is one of our big flagship clients. They're all buying clear plastic bottles from a clear plastic bottle manufacturer. And they're buying little, easily colored caps. Their McCormick's are red and Pepsi's are blue and Cokes are also red, different cap. And they're buying them from a cap manufacturer. So they're unpacking all those boxes all day long, all night long. And back in the old days, they would throw them in a baler. The baler would crush them and your recycler would ship them to China and you'd make scrap rates. We came along and said, hey, it's not like you're unpacking gazillions of different boxes. You're unpacking two or three or four or five of the same boxes. We're going to buy them all at a premium significantly more than the recycling rate because we're not going to recycle them. We're going to bring them all back to our facilities. We're going to sort them, inspect them, palletize them, inventory them into our software and potentially into our client's software. We can get to that later and allow our clients, the Walmarts, the Walgreens, the Best Buys, the Family Dollars, the Dollar Trees to buy them out of our inventory and utilize them. So then the question is, well, why would a Walmart buy boxes? Walmart gets an enormous amount of their products overseas. They come in by ocean containers. They go to distribution centers. But now, if you think of a small item at Walmart, lipstick. The lipstick might come in a box of 1,000 lipsticks. No one store needs 1,000 of the same lipstick. They need 50 or 75 right. or 100. Mm-hmm. But they also need 50 tweezers and they also need 50 this and 50 that. So Walmart and Walgreens and everybody else does a process called pick and pack. They pick the items that they want to go to that store. They pack them in a box. Those boxes are not going to go, that truck is not going to go back to the distribution center. It's going to then pick up something else near the distribution center and go somewhere else. So that retailer is never going to see those boxes again. And what those retailers have learned is for the local stores that are close to a distribution center where they own the trucks, use the boxes, go out, bring the empty boxes back. And a lot of companies do that. But for the distant stores, the truck's not coming back, the boxes are not coming back. So you might as well use the cheapest box possible, which would be a used box from us.
Okay.
So that's the model. We buy millions of boxes from the big manufacturers that are unpacking the same thing over and over again, sort them, inspect them, palletize them, inventory them, and then sell them to major retailers that need a low-cost one-way box to get their stuff out to their stores. We also have a small branch, which is the consumer branch. We then take those same exact boxes, but we take mediums, larges, and extra larges, along with tape, paper, box cutters. Here's my little, we have a little used cover box, the box cutter, markers, and we make moving kits, just like U-Haul does. But instead of them saying U-Haul on the side and being brand new and getting, you know, paying U-Haul prices, ours might say Acme Plastics on the side because it held plastic bottles that were going to a manufacturer. So you still get the mediums, the larges, the extra larges, the tape, the paper, everything, but you get it for a whole lot cheaper. And we FedEx it directly to your house.
Oh, you FedEx it. That was going to be my question. As a consumer, if I was going to move, how would I get boxes from used cardboard boxes?
So we started in Los Angeles 15 years ago. We got up to having 9 different distribution centers in the U.S.
Wow.
But then we got much better and much more efficient. So now we have 4. So we have 4 distribution points in the U.S. We have Los Angeles, outside of St. Louis, outside of Milwaukee, and Baltimore that ship via FedEx every single day.
Wow.
So no matter where you are in the country, you're going to get your moving kit within 2 business days.
That's great. Okay, so you've been telling a story of growth. I can sense how you've been growing. You said that you're using applications, technology applications in the inventory, potentially even the customers' systems. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I'm very lucky. My background is technology. I understand technology, but I couldn't even write a line of code, even after being involved in it for so long. Lucky for me, when I got involved with the venture capital firm that funded us, there was a gentleman at the venture capital firm who was a computer scientist. He was also a principal at the venture capital firm. While we were building the model, he's thinking in his head how it would work from a technology perspective. How do you match, you know, a 24 by 24 by 20 in Seattle with a customer that wants an 18 by 16 by 12 in Miami? Short answer is you don't. But as you get bigger and bigger and start to have critical mass across the country, you need software that's going to say, hey, wait, this manufacturing firm in Dayton, Ohio has a box within 3 inches of a retailer in Evansville, Indiana. And thanks to a real-time connection with a freight company, we say, hey, we can take a truckload of those boxes and put them on the road and deliver them to this company for a profit. And that's happening. It's like a stock market. It's happening 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We're running matches. Sometimes the match is direct, pick it up from the client, deliver it to the customer. Sometimes the match needs to be sorted. We have to pick up 4 different boxes from the supplier, bring it to our facility, sort them, inspect them, separate them, and then send the ones out to the 4. So that's where the technology really came from, is we built the technology around our business model, which was expensive, complicated. The amount of money we spent building our software, we could have been a software company and we could have sold it to other companies.
It sounds like it.
Yeah, but instead we built it for us and it's allowed us to create this entire marketplace.
That is so interesting. I mean, and very complex. Talk about challenges around logistics, supply chain. As you have to make changes, what's your decision process like? How do you evaluate? What are you expecting to achieve?
Yeah, for 1 second, because you said it's complicated and I want to agree with you. You know, I'm going to throw out some of the complications that our technology has to take in consideration.
Yeah.
The box you're buying might be a 24-2020. But that's not what it looks like when it's being shipped, because they're all shipped flattened.
Of course. Right.
So you're not. Right. So you're asking for something that we can't take that dimension and see how many fit on a trailer. We have to then logically flatten it and put it on a trailer. But if the box doesn't fit on a trailer, it has to go on a pallet. So every single box that we have a dimension for, we also have to have a flattened dimension for. Then every box we have a flattened dimension for, we have to have a pallet count for. Sometimes one fits on a pallet. Sometimes they sit side by side on a pallet and you have 2 stacks on one pallet. Then there's 52 pallets that fit on a tractor trailer. Then there's a cost per mile to deliver. Then there's sorting fees and unloading fees and loading fees. All of that stuff is put into our software to help us make these decisions. And then we've developed our own internal, nobody really sees this but us, we've developed a green, yellow, red. So green means it's worth looking at. This is a profitable transaction. Yellow means if none of those greens work, you could still look at these. These might work if you can get on the phone with the transportation company or work some magic or work the pricing or work the flexibility from the customer. And red is very likely not going to work from a logistics standpoint. So our sales team looks at, you know, pulls these reports and looks at the greens and try, you know, can be on the phone with the customer saying, well, I got a 24/20/20 that I can get to you for roughly, you know, 75 cents a piece delivered. And they go, oh, that's worth it. So then we go in and do the details. How do we now manage that change? I wish I had the answer. It's very, very challenging. One of the things we're doing now, 20 years into this, is making everybody think, changing our culture of thinking in terms of ROI. It's very easy to say, wouldn't this be cool if our customers could just do this? Wouldn't it be cool if the software automatically did this and this? And the answer is, yeah, it would be super cool. But now we're asking, what is that going to look like? And very often, there's no clear-cut answer. But what we've learned is if the person requesting the technology changes can't even articulate in the form of ROI, then they need to go back and think it through. And, you know, we've wasted a lot of time and a lot of money building really cool stuff. And shame on me because, you know, again, I started the company doing really cool stuff of PR and publicity. Those things don't pay the bills unless you have an engine, right? PR and publicity can pay the bills if it feeds an engine that makes money. Back then, I didn't have an engine that made money. I just had an idea. So we kind of look at the same thing now. If you want to, you know, color code, whatever it is, whatever feature you want, you got to be able to talk about it in forms of ROI. If this would help us get 10% more profit or 10% more customers, then this many customers we'd have to go through to even meet the cost that it's going to take to do it. And what is that timeline? And if it's, I don't know, and probably 5 years we'll figure it out, then it's a no, it's not worth looking at. If it's a, I'm pretty sure that within a year, this type of result could happen, then it's worth looking at.
How are you coming up with those ROIs? So when you're working with the team and you're encouraging them to have that pretty solid, which I agree with, I think that's important because you have to have metrics in order to guide the decision process. Are you leveraging any technologies to help with that? I'm imagining forecasting, potentially even AI to help with models.
Short answer, no, not yet. I would definitely say we are the most advanced, sophisticated company in the used box industry, and yet nowhere near being able to utilize. Well, in some ways, we're starting to, but at the core of the business, it's very, very challenging because there's so much information going on. And again, it seems so simple. Oh, you sell used boxes, you get them for cheap and you sell them. No, the cost of the logistics, the cost of the tractor trailers are so expensive to move something where you're only going to make a few cents per item. If the tractor trailer costs $3,000, you better be making $4,000 to $5,000. Profit. In order to make $4,000 to $5,000 profit, you know, there's a lot involved there. So we have not mastered that to the point where AI can really look at what we've done and start to develop those trends quite yet. But we're looking at it. You know, we learn a lot every single day and we learn from each other. We have about 125 people now and we're all learning from each other. We have, you know, all kinds of internal knowledge and SOP database of how to do things and how we've done them. And we're learning with our customers. Our customers are changing every single day.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about how you collaborate as a team. You know, because you said you're driving this culture of ROI. And I'm curious, how are you bringing them in?
Well, I'll give a huge unpaid shout out to EOS. If you've ever heard of EOS, the Entrepreneurial Operating System.
Yeah.
So I referred to a guy at the venture capital firm that was a computer scientist. He ultimately left the VC firm and became our COO and CFO. And then ultimately became my business partner. So his name is David and Marty. You know, we used to joke, it's the David and Marty show. It's David and Marty and 10 other people. Then it was David and Marty and 20 other people and David and Marty and 50 other people. And it got to the point of David and Marty and 100 other people. And David and Marty knew what we were doing, but it was so, so crazy difficult. You know, we would remember what we talked about in meetings sometimes, but we would have all these meetings and everything was have a meeting to find out if David and Marty are okay with that or have a meeting to find out what David and Marty want to do. We didn't realize how bad we had it because we were growing. We were doing things great. But we heard about EOS. We implemented EOS and holy crap, we look back and we don't know how we survived this long without it. So what EOS, you know, anybody can talk about it for hours, but for anyone who doesn't know what EOS is, I'll give my own perspective. EOS helps any organization think about things in a couple different ways. One big distinction is to-dos versus issues. To-dos are something that needs to be done by a person that can do it, period. So, Carrie, you need to go to the store and pick up milk. You're perfectly capable of doing it, and Carrie has a to-do, go get milk. Issues are things that need to be talked about. Do we even want milk? What is it that we want? What is it that we're trying to achieve? So issues of what are we trying to achieve and what do we need for it can turn into to-dos. So, okay, what we're trying to do is make a cake and we do need milk. So Carrie is going to get a to-do to get the milk. But then if Carrie goes to the store and they're out of milk, a to-do can become an issue. I'm now out of milk and I need an alternative and I don't know what to do. So what EOS helped us do is make everything in our company either a to-do, it's owned by somebody, just get it done, or an issue, there's an issue, we need to talk about it. And both can convert back and forth. The other thing EOS does is helps goal setting. You know, what is your big goal? And then how does it break down to 10-year goal, 3-year goal, 1-year goal, 90-day goals? We implemented that, and they say it takes 2-some years to implement EOS. And we've been doing it for over 2 years, and we agree. We agree. It takes a long time to change the culture. And instead of emailing and going, hey, Marty, I was thinking about making a cake. What do you think? And I'm like, are you serious? You just sent me an email. I got 1,000 emails today. And you're asking me, what do I think about making a cake? I need context. I need understanding. What are you trying to, you know, it's like the emails that we were sending back and forth were ridiculous. Now, if you want to know what I think about making a cake, make it an issue. We discuss it at the meeting. It converts to a to-do and we get things done. So that's a very, very, very simplistic way of looking at EOS, but there's all kinds of metrics and software and all kinds of good stuff, but that has helped us tremendously. Back to your question about ROI. Somebody wants to bake cake. It's an issue. Let's talk about it. What's the ROI? What's the point? How much is the cake going to cost? What do you think you're going to make back? Okay. Once we've all got on board with it, then we can assign the to-dos to get it done.
Well, now I'm definitely craving cake and that is some great advice. What else, like what other kinds of advice would you share with others who are in, you know, similar situations? I think we all got a great crash course on what not to
EOS.
Do. EOS too, but
I mean, I have so 20 years of lessons learned from an entrepreneurial perspective, you know, building a company, EOS is amazing. It helps you just get your everything structured into a way that you can communicate. From a larger business, which we are now, knock on wood, you know, revenue is important, but is not what helps you survive. Profit is the only thing that allow you to survive. And then I can argue that and say profit is a concept. It doesn't help you survive. Cash flow actually helps you survive. So people that are like, you know, I watch Shark Tank all the time because I think it's truly entertaining. And it's like, you know, we doubled our revenue. Yeah. Okay. That means literally nothing. That means you doubled your headaches, you doubled your orders, you doubled your revenue. That it's not that it's not impressive. It just means nothing about the health of your business. So then it's like, well, what was the profit? And then it's like, well, okay, then from the profit, what was the cash flow? And then it's like, okay, then what did you do with the cash flow? Did you put it in your pocket or did you reinvest it in the company? So it's really important to understand the flow all the way down to what is being done with that money. And then from a very, very selfish perspective as an entrepreneur, what does it do for you? You know, if you're doing build your own business for 20 years and you're miserable, what's the point? So really understanding what the vision of your company is, all the way down to how the money's going to come in, how the money's going to go out, when, what's the timing, what's the cash flow, and then how's it going to affect you? Sometimes you can talk yourself out of a business pretty quickly. Like, that's not what I want for the rest of my life. So that's from the entrepreneurial. And then, you know, we didn't even talk about UCB Zero Waste, which is our new company, which does complete, fully managed waste solutions for similar companies. You know, the big lesson we learned there is A, companies shouldn't have a lot of waste. And B, waste shouldn't really cost a lot. You don't need to be like the concept of I'm green shouldn't cost money to be green. The concept of I'm going to be sustainable shouldn't cost money to be sustainable. You shouldn't have to go out and buy something that makes you sustainable. An efficient business is sustainable. Efficient operations, you know, Six Sigma is green. Being efficient is green. Reducing your waste reduces your cost. So as much as I'm a diehard eco entrepreneur and we, you know, our clients are Fortune 500 companies, I always have to remind everybody, like, duh, like, don't go out and build a green initiative. Don't go out and build a green department. Don't go out and make a budget to go green. Just be green. Just be efficient with your resources. And that in itself is green. It's also going to save you money. And if you do it the way we do it, it's going to make you money because you can resell your waste.
Would you tell us a little bit about the side of the business you said, the second one, UCB Zero Waste?
Yeah.
Give us an overview.
To make a long story short, you know, 15 years of buying and selling boxes and building software to create a national marketplace for used boxes that, you know, the recycling world is not real happy with because we're going out and paying a lot more than recycling rates. And then the box manufacturers who cut down trees and make boxes, they're not real happy either. We're able to provide boxes to Walmart for cheaper than they are. After 15 years of doing that, those same clients were saying, well, you know, what about everything else? What about my pallets, my barrels, my drums, my food waste, my hazmat? And at first we were like, we're used cardboard boxes. Like, leave us alone. We focus on boxes. And then we started looking at how much money these big Fortune 500 companies are spending to, quote, get rid of waste. And we were so appalled. We said we could take the foundation of our software, which is designed for boxes, and we could kind of back up and look at how we can design software for all waste. And we built software called Water Waste. It's WATER, Waste Analytics and Tracking for Environmental Reporting. And what Water allows us to do is look at every commodity, every vendor, every logistics scenario, every invoice, and really understand landfill diversion. And landfill diversion is important because landfill costs money. Diverting from landfill saves money. So what Water does is takes a holistic approach of every single commodity in a major manufacturer. McCormick Spice is known as the number one most sustainable food manufacturer in the world. They get a lot of press and PR on that. We manage their entire North American waste stream, all in Water. And what it has allowed us to do is really make economic financial decisions by really dissecting the data. I mean, I can't tell you how many times a Fortune 500 company tells us we got a really good rate on our landfill. It's only $75 a ton. And we go, okay, that's relatively good rate. I don't know if we're going to be able to get that cheaper, but let's actually take the data and put it into our software. And let's realize that although you're only paying $75 a ton, you're paying $500 per pickup and your vendor's picking it up every day. It
adds up.
And the vendor is picking up a truck or a compactor that could hold 8 tons, but only had 1 ton in it. So if your vendor is charging you $500 a pickup for a compactor that's a tenth of the way full, you're literally paying 10 times as much as you need to pay. But nobody knows that because the contract says you've got a great rate. So it's not about, I always say, it's not about the rate. It's often about the weight, W-E-I-G-H-T, and the logistics and the scheduling and all that good stuff. So what Water does is took our 10 years of understanding the complexities of moving low-cost commodities, i.e. use boxes, and now we've applied it to all commodities. And rather than being the truck driver that picks it up, which is what used cardboard boxes does, UCB Zero Waste is a management company that manages all commodities.
That's amazing. I could see how it's all that information is revealed by the data. Yeah. And then they can make much more informed decisions.
And then the big thing is that's coming is, you know, everybody wants to understand carbon and carbon tracking and carbon reporting. A huge part of carbon reporting is your waste. You cannot track your carbon if you don't track your waste. What our software allows you to do is track your waste, and we track it for you. So when you use our software to track your waste, you automatically have the data you need to do your carbon tracking.
Wow.
Which is like a huge gap in the world today. So we're working with some really big Fortune 500s that are pretty excited because, you know, as they say, you can't measure it if you don't track it, or vice versa, whatever they say. We're allowing them to track it and then use it to calculate their carbon. And then, of course, reduce their carbon.
Incredible. Incredible. Okay. Well, this has been a great learning opportunity. It's inspiring. I'm really excited to learn about the change that you're making in the world and in the industry. As we wrap up, Marty, can you share the best way for us to learn more about the work that you do, used cardboard boxes and UCB Zero Waste?
You know, I have a lot of scars from all the press and PR that we did 15 years ago. So we're not a big press and PR company. Our websites are minimal. Some of them we haven't even looked at them in a while. But usecoverbox.com is the box website, really focused on consumers, to be honest with you, which is a very small part of our business. UCBZeroWaste.com is the zero waste website. It allows you to sign up for a free audit. And it's funny, people are like, well, free audit, that sounds cheesy, sounds like there's a trick. No, we do a free audit for qualified companies to find out if we think there's an opportunity. And the way we do UCB Zero Waste, it's all based on shared savings. So we don't charge to run these programs. We only take a portion of what we save our clients. So these big Fortune 500 companies, they might be spending $10 million on waste. If we can help them save 20% of that, that's $2 million in savings, and we get a portion of that. Mm-hmm. And it's a three-year program. So in order for us to embark on a three-year program, we need to know there's money to be made for us. So we do a free audit on qualified companies, and then we go back to the company and say, look, there's like $500,000 here. We're going to get part of it. You're going to get part of it. So in order to see if there's an opportunity, any company that's listening can go to ucbzerowaste.com, see if you qualify for a free audit. We have a couple of questions we have to ask to find out. And then, yeah, if you're a big company that spends a lot of money on waste, there's a good chance that just by getting all your data into our software, we can see everything from the tricks of the trade, i.e. hauling empty dumpsters, to overages, to all kinds of surcharges that don't belong there. And then when we can look at that and say, wow, there's hundreds of thousands of dollars that can be saved, then it's a no-brainer. It's a win-win.
That's wonderful. I feel like we're getting the exclusive, Marty, being able to talk with you after you've been laying low for so long.
I have been laying low because I learned a lot of painful lessons about business, about, you know, going out there and talking doesn't really do anything. Now we have, you know, two quite profitable companies that are growing fast. Now me going out there and talking to people, and one, it's rewarding for me. I do a lot of public speaking now. But two, if it drives someone to our business model can now benefit from it. Yeah. Rather than 10 years ago, you know, I remember the first time Walmart called us. It happened with Amazon also. Walmart and Amazon, and I'm very proud and I'm going to brag, we never called Walmart. We never called Amazon. They both called used cover boxes. And right away, we couldn't help either of them. So what's the point in going out there and attracting a whole bunch of people and companies that you can't help? So I have laid low and been very focused. We do a huge project with General Mills. So when we were doing so much work with General Mills, we picked up the phone and we called Kellogg's. We said, hey, do we just, you know, no website, no marketing, no advertising. We just want to call you and tell you what we're doing with another major player in your industry. And that led to a huge program with Kellogg's. So we'd much rather be very, very focused and have intelligent conversations than pay a whole bunch of money for SEO and SEM so that we can funnel through, you know, Mrs. Johnson, who has a antique shop in Alabama, who thinks maybe we can help her. I wish we could, but we probably can't.
Yeah. I mean, really solid, pragmatic advice.
Yeah.
So thank you.
From a lot of lessons learned.
Yes. All right. Well, with that, thank you again to my guest, Marty Metro, the founder and CEO of Used Cardboard Boxes and UCB Zero Waste. We look forward to seeing whatever shipping next. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to Manufacturing the Future, brought to you by Epicor. For the latest episodes, search for this show on your podcast platform of choice. Make sure to subscribe to get notified when a new episode is released. To learn more about Epicor, visit epicor.com.